大家好, welcome to Afternoon at Us, where two Asian K-drama fans, Sarah and Grace, ask and hopefully answer all of our drama-related questions. We also share Korean and Chinese language tips, as well as our experiences as diaspora Asians living in the UK and US. Join us as we delve into the details and context of the dramas we all love.
Hello, and welcome to our latest episode of Afternoon It Asks. Today, we're going to do a beginner's guide to Chinese for drama watchers, which is a topic we've been meaning to do for a while. I'm mainly going to be asking questions, and Sarah is going to be talking about Chinese language. But let's start first with, what do we mean when we say Chinese?
Yeah, good question. So for Chinese drama fans, it's pretty simple. The Chinese they hear is Mandarin Chinese or 普通话, which is the standardized Chinese language used throughout China. So in English, we call it Mandarin Chinese as it was the Chinese used in court, in the imperial court by Mandarins. And it's based on the Northern Chinese language spoken around Beijing, where the Chinese court was for centuries. And then the Chinese Communist Party adopted the phrase 普通话, and 普通 means the common, and 话 is language. And it's used to describe this standardized Chinese that's taught as the standard Chinese today. And it's also the Chinese that's used on, you know, classic kind of news channels. So all of the government Chinese national news channels, CCTV is what we call it, that all uses standardized Chinese. In Hong Kong, we call this in Cantonese, Guoyu, or in Mandarin, Guoyu, which means national language. So the language of the nation. But I think politically speaking, in mainland China, 普通话 is preferred because this gives space for some ethnic minorities who use different dialects. So, for example, in our My Dearest podcast, we talked about Manchurian, which is a dialect slash language from the northeast region of China. And I speak Cantonese, which is the dialect slash language that is common around Guangdong or Canton province and the island of Hong Kong. Although I kind of remember, so confusingly for Chinese learners, we are taught the phrase Hanyu to mean Chinese. So in all our classic Chinese textbooks, that's the language that you, that's the phrase that we say. So 我说话,我说汉语, like I speak the language of the Han people. And the Han people are the majority ethnicity in China. It's something like 98% of Chinese people are from the Han ethnicity. And Mandarin Chinese or 普通话 is also the main Chinese spoken in Taiwan as well as Singapore. However, there are many regional languages which some linguists argue are not dialects, which is why I was saying dialect slash language. For example, in older people in rural regions might only understand standard Chinese when someone speaks it to them, but they can't actually speak it themselves. They would use their own local language. And for example, as I said, Cantonese is a language which I speak, but then there's also Hakka, which means a guest family in Chinese, and my uncle speaks Hakka, which kind of comes from the southern region around, like slightly north of Canton. And then there's Hokkien, which many people in Taiwan speak, or in Taiwan it's called Minonghua, and it comes from the Fujian area, which is the southeast coast nearest Taiwan. But then younger people living in urban areas will all be completely fluent in standard Chinese. And actually, they might not speak any of their local language from where their family might be from. And the PRC government, so the mainland Chinese government, aims for all of its population to speak standard Chinese at some point. And I don't think they're far off from this goal. So eventually, kind of everybody in the population will all speak a standard Chinese.
So interesting. I'm actually particularly fascinated by the dialect versus language debate that you mentioned, because you said before that you separately learned Mandarin in college. And in our pod episode with William Han about Wuxia, it seemed like he couldn't make out what you were saying at all when you switched to Cantonese. And then I also have a friend from Shanghai, and I think I recall her telling me that Mandarin speakers can't understand Shanghainese and vice versa. But when we talk about dialects in Korean, we mostly are talking about kind of smaller regional variations in pronunciation, grammar, and vocabulary, but Koreans can basically all understand each other still, except for when it comes to the Jeju dialect or language. So, where do you come down on the debate? Do you think of all of these different kinds of quote unquote Chinese as separate languages or dialects? Because I feel like if you speak to one another and you can't understand each other, I feel like isn't that a separate language then at that point?
I know what you mean. Well, obviously, I'm not a linguist, but I do feel like they are different languages. And also, I don't know what Shanghaiese is like. I don't know what Hokkien is like, because as we just said, they're mutually unintelligible. So I can't understand my uncle when he speaks Hakka. I don't understand if someone's speaking to me Shanghaiese. My brother, my younger brother, speaks fluent Cantonese, but never learned Mandarin. So he does not understand a single word of Mandarin. So, I mean, for Cantonese, for me, it's like a different language because we also have a slightly different sentence structure, and we also have a completely different vocab that doesn't exist in Mandarin. You can't just translate it. I will go on to talk about the written language, because the written language for all Chinese is the same. You just read it out in your own regional language or accent. I guess a bit like kanji for Japan and hanja for Koreans. Like, the language meaning of the character stays the same. We just all pronounce it in different ways.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting too. And my husband and I have actually had this conversation before because he can't wrap his head around that. He's like, how does that work exactly? And I was like, maybe it's kind of like how people talk about, like math being the language of science and how two scientists can like not speak each other's languages, but they can write down like formulas and stuff and they can understand what each other are thinking based on, mathematics. But yeah, I'm not sure if there's another like language like corollary to that kind of thing, like written Chinese language versus all the spoken Chinese languages and like other languages written and spoken. Like, I don't know if there's anything else like that in the world.
I think it's because obviously Chinese language is pictogrammatic, right? So it's not alphabetical. So it's really interesting because I had a Japanese. So I have a friend at uni who was half British, half Japanese, and he was completely fluent in both. And so he read in both and he thought in both. So being able to think in another language to me is like the true sign of bilinguacy, right? Because I have never thought. I said when I was younger, I like nowadays, I've never really thought in Cantonese. But he can read both, and he says for him, it's quicker to read characters than it is to read English. Because if you think about it, when you read English, you are actually reading the letters, and then your brain has to mush them up together to become the word. And then your brain has to then look the word up in your brain. Obviously, this all happens very quickly to find what the meaning is. But in Chinese or with Chinese characters, the meaning is immediately there. You don't need to read and decode alphabetical characters to produce a word to then translate what that word means. It's bang. It's like that is the character for a flower. So you don't have to go FLOWER. Your brain doesn't have to decode in that way. So he was like saying it's like much quicker. So that's, I guess, why there isn't really an equivalent, because it is a completely different way to approach how you have language.
That's really cool. So when you say like you can write down the characters and everyone just reads it back in their spoken variation, how similar is it? Because like if you and you said you don't think in Cantonese, but if you're thinking in Cantonese to write down a sentence, then you write it down and then you switch and you're like, okay, I'm reading it back in Mandarin. Does it like Does it read the same way or mean exactly the same thing, or is it slightly different because of the like slight differences in grammar and like connotation of things? Is it like awkward if you're thinking in Cantonese and you write something down and then somebody who only speaks Mandarin reads it? Like, does it do you think it would feel awkward to them, like it's awkwardly written, or would it just feel exactly the same?
No, this is a really good question. So, simplistically speaking, Mandarin written Chinese spoken out loud is basically the Mandarin language. It's standardized Chinese. So it sounds completely normal to read out sentences from a book in Chinese and sound like you're speaking Mandarin. Obviously, give and take the formality of language, and you'd obviously have probably a bit more flowery text in prose. But assuming that you basically had some, say, you had a script and it was all in written Chinese, all of that would sound perfectly natural in standardized Chinese. If I read out the same script, written characters in Cantonese, I would sound really weird. I would sound really formal. So not exactly the same as Shakespearean English because it doesn't have that kind of archaic feel, but it definitely sounds like you're not speaking like the vernacular language. And someone like my brother would probably fail to understand. Like, so he's fluent in Cantonese, but he's fluent in like oral spoken Cantonese of the everyday kind, you know. So like he can, you know, navigate his way around Hong Kong speaking totally fluently, but would struggle to understand someone who was speaking in a very formal context, or probably, you know, very formal university lectures, or very formal news reports, or political reports. So stuff that generally requires a bit more formalized Chinese, he probably would struggle with, because there's quite a difference between the formal Chinese that's in written Mandarin and the informal kind of like things that we say. So for example, like it like I was going back to my learning Chinese days. So in Mandarin, one of the first, I mean, in any language, I think when you learn it, one of the most useful phrases that you learn is that you say you don't understand, right? So somebody says something to you and you go, I don't understand. And so in Mandarin, that is, well, 听不懂. So I don't, I listen, can't understand is the real translation of that. So, well, 听不懂. But if I said that in Cantonese, it would be 我听不懂. And if you said that to someone in Cantonese, they'd be like, what? Like, what are you? Like, A, you sound really formal, like you're like reciting poetry or something. But secondly, they're just not words that, you know, they're just not the words we'd use. Like in Cantonese, I'd say 我听明. So 我听明 means like I listen. So the those two are the same. Ming is like the negative for Cantonese. Ming, and Ming is to understand. So we use a much more casual form of the word understand than Mandarin does, which uses a very formal sounding. To a Cantonese speaker, this sounds very formal word, very proper word to say understand.
Interesting.
So maybe somebody like, you know, if they were speaking Bridgerton style Regency English to you, and like Cantonese is like urban street English, like that's probably like the difference, you know. So that's kind of the juxtaposition. You'd have it like in a time travel novel. That's kind of like how they interact. But yeah, so for me personally, because I'm a bit of a, like, you know, mongrel when it comes to my language, that I spoke Cantonese to my parents. It was actually the first language that I spoke. I went to school not being able to speak English, and then picked it up. And obviously, English is now my mother tongue, and I'm fluent in Chinese, in Cantonese, but I don't consider myself native, because I do struggle with definitely the formal Chinese, Cantonese. And you can hear from my accent that I am not formally like from Hong Kong. So I learned how to speak it, but I never learned to read and write it, because the reading and writing obviously is really challenging and really hard. But it's something I picked up at university when I did my degree in Chinese. And it was kind of cool. So it was like first time in my life that I could write things to my parents Because my parents don't speak very good English and they don't really read English. So we never had a written way of communicating with each
Oh,
other.
wow.
Yeah. And I remember I went to China. So I went to, obviously, I'm very old, but I went to China as part of my year out in my university. And in those days, there was email then, but my parents weren't online with email. And so I remember writing letters to my mum. And it was quite good because it was good practice for me to be writing Chinese characters. But those were the first letters I'd ever written to my own mum because it was the first time we had a language that we could use with each other. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was cool. And I remember thinking it's like quite a light bulb moment. But anyway, so it means that randomly nowadays, when I read Chinese, I can't actually read it in Cantonese. I read it because my brain learnt written Chinese in Mandarin. So I read it in Mandarin. I have to translate it as I go. So it's very slow for me to read out Chinese, written Chinese in Cantonese because I have to go through a two-step translation process to get
Oh,
there.
wow. That's really interesting.
Luckily it does. Luckily the need is not often needed, except when I'm trying to like sort my parents like flipping PC or iPhone out in Chinese. That's like
Do
really
you
painful.
text them? Do you text them in Chinese?
Yeah, I do. But so this was the other thing that's really fascinating for me because I love watching people with different languages use their phones, right? Because for us, it's like alphabetical. It's really easy. Like Korean, obviously, you've got Hangul, so you've got the Hangul alphabet. But even then, like I find it really fascinating watching K-dramas when they're so quick, aren't they? Like you're putting all these
They
different
are
Hanguls
so
together,
quick.
and
I am not.
it's just fascinated by how it hangs together. And the same thing with Japanese. But so I was always like, actually, how do Chinese people, because I know how I do it. So I learn as part of learning standardized Chinese in nowadays, as part of kind of the mainland Chinese way of romanization. So we talked about romanization before in our language pod. So it's the process of how you write Chinese characters in an English language so that it can be spelt out. So one of the best things, I guess, that the Chinese Communist Party did was to standardize the romanization of Chinese into pinyin. And it means there's no guessing what the romanization is because there are many different romanization styles. I think, as we discussed before, generally named after two white men that did the romanization. Yeah. So, and you have to know which romanization system that textbook or whatever that old novel or whatever is using in order to know what Chinese character they're actually saying, because obviously, like Korean, one sound can have multiple different meanings, right? So you have to know. It's a bit like, you often say, I need to see this in Hangul before I know how to say it properly, because the romanization is always a bit like off, like you don't know which one they're using. So yeah, in the same way. But nowadays, the pinyin is completely standardized. Everybody in China and everybody in Singapore uses exactly the same pinyin. In Taiwan, they use Wei Jiles, which is one of these two white men romanization things. So, but at least you know when you're in Taiwan that they standardly use that particular romanization. Anyway, so I was watching Hidden Love recently, and I was watching our very good looking male lead type into his phone, and he uses an English keyboard and he uses pinyin. So he actually does it the same way I do it. So yeah. So nowadays, obviously, the software is really, really smart. So as soon as you start typing in a pinyin, it will read the context of what you're already writing and suggest the characters that you are about to type. So obviously, for some common sounds, like sh is a good comment. So SHI, there are probably, I don't actually know, probably about 200 SHI characters. So if you think about it, I'm typing SHI and I have to scroll through 200 characters to find the SHI that I want or need. But the pinyin software now is so smart that basically I just start typing the sentence. I don't stop to find the right sh and the right wo and the right, I just start typing the entire sentence and it figures out what I'm trying to say and will figure out which character of the 200 shs, which one I might be wanting to use because of the context of the sentence that I'm writing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it is really cool. So it means
Wow.
that it's a lot faster than it perhaps sounds like it would potentially be. And shi is used
Yeah.
all the time. Like shi is like I am 我是中国人, and I am Sarah, or shi like shi dian, like it's 10 o'clock, or shi is like business. It's one of the most common words. So if you think about how if you didn't have that kind of AI software kind
Yeah.
of computation, like it would be really hard for you to always work it out.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm actually jealous of people who learn Chinese language in this day and age as opposed to when I was like a younger student, because I am old school enough to have had to use a dictionary and look up characters based on radicals, which are parts of the Chinese stroke, and it takes
Right.
forever. And now you have, like OCR, so you have character recognition software that you can just zap on a phone and it will tell you
Ah.
exactly what the character is, and you don't have to be poring through like dictionaries like I did,
Yeah.
for hours and hours trying to find the right, radical with the right stroke. And you have to count the strokes. So like in old school like dictionary, you would have to say a character had like 25 strokes. You have to count all the 25 strokes and then find the section that with that radical that has all the 25 stroke characters in it. And obviously you could miss one, so then you're like, oh shoot, it's 23, not 24. So then you have to go and find the 23 like stroke
Oh
section.
my
But not anymore,
wow.
luckily, not anymore. So
Yeah.
people learning it now have it so much easier. I'm like really
Oh.
like a moany boomer when it comes to people who learn Chinese now. I'm just like, you don't know what it was like for those of us.
Then your brother who didn't, I imagine didn't study
Yeah, he
Mandarin
didn't
in
study
college
Mandarin, yeah.
or the written Mandarin. So he can also text your
Oh no,
parents.
he
He
now
can't.
uses no, he now uses Google Translate.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
that's
So he does that.
the
But
wonders of
in the
technology.
wonders of technology, but in the olden days, he couldn't write stuff to my parents. Yeah.
Okay,
Like he
'cause
couldn't just you
he
couldn't yeah. You couldn't even leave a note, unless it was super basic English that said like buy milk or something like that. But if it was anything more
Yeah.
complicated, like I've gone to a friend's house and I'll be back at like 6, like that would not work. So yeah.
Man, that must have been hard, like before cell phones. You
Yeah.
can't like write notes. Wow, yeah. That's
Yeah.
really do you find that like being able to write to your parents in Chinese like makes it feel like you've gotten closer?
Yeah,
Just
definitely. Yeah.
curious.
Although, like I said, it's also funny. So the other thing I didn't mention that I was going to say, and this is obviously not a podcast about Cantonese, but Cantonese has, I think it's about 500 characters that do not exist. They don't exist in Mandarin, and
Ah.
they are the most common like vernacular type Cantonese that we use. So we have a load of words that don't exist in Mandarin because they are
Oh.
so colloquial and yeah, vernacular Cantonese. And so I don't actually know how to spell those on my pinyin keyboard. So my parents write to me, because they do so interestingly, they never learned pinyin, obviously, because they never learned Mandarin. So they input their characters via handwriting. So
Oh.
you can get handwriting keyboards. So
Right,
they
right,
actually
right.
do, and it's so clever. Like literally trying to do this. I'm just wiggling at Grace. This is so not podcast friendly, but I'm just like wiggling my finger in the air, and the phone will know what it's, even though they're not writing it super clearly, like with a stylus or anything, they're just wriggling. The phone will know the character
Oh.
they're trying to write.
Is it like based on stroke order
Oh no,
or
they just
like
literally
the
write the Chinese
general?
character. They just
Oh,
write the Chinese
okay,
character.
like,
Yeah.
yeah.
So, yeah, like Ch Chinese and J Japanese people do it too, because I'm watching this new J drama, like I Love You, and they're like writing on each other's palms of the hand, and that's quite a common thing to do. Like my Japanese friend used to do it all the time. She because sometimes she'd be like, oh, what character is this? And they're like, they start air writing this character, and I'm like, my Chinese is not good enough to read air writing. So can you write actual writing? But they do it. They do it all the time. They air write to each other. So anyway, they write into their iPhone, and that's how they do it. So they have all of these additional Cantonese characters. So it's really funny. So our chat is them writing in Cantonese. So they sound exactly like they sound exactly like how they would speak, and then I write back in Yin, in Mandarin, effectively Mandarin Chinese. So I sound super formal to my parents.
That's really funny.
Oh, but they understand. I mean, they're just happy that, you know, they don't have to try and decode English, and obviously, you know, and Google Translate is really good, but it's obviously not infallible. So there are times when it fails my brother. But yeah, he has a Hong Kong Chinese wife, so he now has like a walking dictionary next to him. So he's like he's he copes with it.
Cheating, cheating. Just kidding. So more about dramas. Are there Chinese dramas in regional languages or dialects? Or is it mostly all in, you said Mandarin before?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there are ones in regionals. Obviously the ones I grew up watching, which we talked about in an intro pod, in Hong Kong, all of that was in Cantonese. They still produce TV series all in Cantonese, and I think you know, Cantonese regional broadcast companies will also do Cantonese. I also saw that recently there was a news article about a really popular TV series in China called Blossoms Shanghai. And that was actually broadcast with a Shanghaiese cast, and they all spoke Shanghaiese dialect, which is, as you said, a variety of Wu Chinese, which was then dubbed in Mandarin. And both versions of the drama were actually aired. And a lot of the like netizens always have an opinion, but all these ne many people preferred the original Shanghai version because they said it sounded more authentic and expressed the feeling of the characters and what they, you know, how they spoke much more authentically. So yeah, there are versions of it. Obviously, for an international audience, I think we only get the Mandarin dubbed
I
version.
see, I see. So it, the net would those netizens have been people who speak both Mandarin and Shanghainese, or would it have been people who watch the Shanghainese version with a subbing? Like how would they what
Ah, oh, interesting question. Yeah.
how
No,
would they compare?
I assumed it was people that could speak both. Yeah, because otherwise most, yeah, if you don't come from Shanghai, Shanghaiese is unintelligible for you. So, yeah. And it's not even, and like I said, it's not even an accent thing. It's not even like, oh, if I could just kind of tune my ear into hearing it, I would understand. It's a bit like my experience with The Wire. Like I could understand maybe 50% of that dialogue without subtitles. Because it was still a form of English, but Shanghaiese would be completely unintelligible for me. Like I wouldn't get
I
50%,
see.
I would get maybe like 2% or something, you know, the odd word that sounds similar. Yeah.
And the corollary for American English speakers would be like Peaky Blinders. Like I
Ah,
know
yeah.
so many people who are like, I have no idea what they're
Yeah, that is a
saying.
good comparison. Yeah, that's like the Birmingham accent is very sharp. Yeah, it's really.
I mean, it's like you could generally kind of like I could make it out, but
Yeah.
there are other people who are like, it's really hard without
Yeah,
subtitles.
yeah, yeah.
So I haven't watched many Chinese dramas. Actually, I've only watched Love Between Fairy and Devil. So I don't know any of like the common words and phrases that pop up. But I was looking back through our script from the Korean language pod, and I was like, oh, these are the kinds of questions we
Good
ask.
idea. Yeah.
Like how do characters like address each other? Like for example, we talked about how in Korean dramas we often see a woman call an older man oppa, even though he's not her biological brother, he's just like a close male friend or
Yes.
something like that.
Yeah.
Like, is there something similar to that in either Cantonese or Mandarin, or
Yeah.
one or only one and not the other?
Yeah. No, definitely in both. And the same kind of plot kind of point which we spoke about with Oppa and how it can create confusion deliberately is used in Chinese dramas too. So in Hidden Love, for example, the plot of Hidden Love is we see this girl falling for the friend of her older brother. And she meets him when she's, I think, 14 and has a crush on him when she's 14. And we kind of see their journey. But obviously, at 14, she has to call him respectfully. She calls him Gerger, which means is the Opa equivalent. So he's Jiashu Gerger. Jiashu is his name. So Jiashu Gerger. And throughout the drama, this is how she addresses him. And throughout the drama, so at the beginning, we deliberately see her, and this is not a spoiler, we deliberately see her getting him to act as her actual biological brother to get out of an excuse at school. And so, like, to some of her schoolmates, she kind of perpetuates the myth that this guy, the male lead, is her actual biological brother, when
I
obviously he's
see.
not. And then later on in the series, we see this confusion. So this confusion is used to create this kind of conflict, like, the whole time. Because obviously then
Okay.
there's yeah. So yeah, this is used in K dramas as well as in Chinese dramas because we have to address people respectfully. So I think the slight difference between Chinese and Korean that we spoke about is that there is the word you in Chinese. So although we address, so like if I have someone who's my gerger, my oppa, I can address them as that, but then after that I would start using the word you. I don't have to continually refer to, is oppa comfortable? Would oppa like me to do this? That kind of like language grammatical structure doesn't exist so much. So it might not be, when you're watching the drama, you might not hear the word gerger as much as you hear oppa because of the way that we
I
don't need to use
see.
it in Chinese because we have the word you in sentences more
Yeah, that
commonly than in Korean.
that's very convenient.
It's very
Yeah, because they're
convenient.
really, I mean, yeah, the word you is tricky
But
in Korean. It's not like really there.
yeah, it's not
It's
really that. So
very
you have to kind of
safe.
keep replacing. And so and then the
Yeah.
other thing is that we don't differentiate the way the Korean does with whether or not you're a boy or a girl, how you address your elders. So if you're a boy or a girl, you have an older brother or a person that is the similar status as your older brother, he is your gerger. There's no feng or
Okay.
oppa.
All
Yeah.
right.
And then same with an older sister would be a jie jie. And that's the case whether or not you are a boy or a girl. There's no nuna and uni difference. Yeah. So in some ways it's slightly different. It's slightly simpler because you just have to work out whether they're younger or older than you. And then they're and then go accordingly. And then we have the similar in that, your parents' friends are all aunties and uncles, regardless, right?
That was
And
my next question.
yeah. And then all people, your grandparents' generation are all your grannies and grandpas. And then we also have colloquially, like in Cantonese, I think actually in Mandarin Chinese, I see this as well, like more casual ways to address people. So we have a phrase for children, so 小朋友, like little friend. So you can address children in that way. Older kind of ajumma women can address like younger men as like, oh, young man, or in Cantonese we call them, hey, good looking man, good looking boy, like good looking boy, what do you want to buy from my stall today? So yeah, there's always like there are always ways to address people that are not their names.
I mean, and that's true in Korean also, but yeah, I feel like, because of the like honorifics and different levels of formality, it may be more confusing to like Korean learners. And you were saying that there isn't like an honorifics kind of all the different levels of formality and formality as in Chinese as there are in Korean, so not as many. So when you say you're addressing everyone your parents' age as like aunts and uncles and everyone your grandparents' age as grandparents. So is that how you address older people like differently and with respect, like by adding titles instead of like by changing the actual like sentence structure of everything that you speak to them? Ah, okay.
I think the formality is expressed a lot more like English is. So we wouldn't use a slangy language. You would maybe not make your words as casual. You would, maybe use, you would choose slightly more formal vocabulary to use with your teachers and, the friends of your parents and things, just like you would in English. And that's how you would differentiate as opposed to a language you use with your mates that you know really well. But there's no endings or different kind of, I mean, there are some words that are like there's a formal way of saying you. So you in Mandarin is ni, and the formal way of it is nin. So if we were greeting each other and saying good morning, you'd say nin dao, like you'd say that to your professor or your like a friend of your parents or something like that. But then it would just be that one slight different use of the word, and then not it wouldn't impact the rest of your sentence in the
You don't
same
have
way it
to
does for
change all
Korean.
the endings of all of your verbs.
Exactly. And then I think the formality within relationships doesn't last as long as in Korea. So, like for me, it's still jarring to hear, for me in K dramas, couples that are still, calling each other something something shi at the end,
Oh, something, something she like for a really, really long time.
So like you're married and you're still calling each other, So we
Totally.
don't we that still would be odd in Chinese like relationships, like especially if you're married, like to keep that kind of level of formality.
And I think it's increasingly disused in Korean relationships also. Like it's tends to be older people. And in a lot of the dramas it tends to be like, when they're like workplace stuff and so they're used to addressing them each other by their like work titles and things like that. That's like, it tends to happen more then. But yeah. That's so interesting seeing the differences. Okay, so let's do a couple of phrases that I'm sure that C drama watchers will hear. Like, for example, how do you say I love you in Mandarin?
This is
Or I like you.
Actually a really interesting cultural question that kind of came up in the Patreon, actually. So I don't know if you've seen, but quite a few of our patrons really loved a recent C drama called Amidst a Snowstorm of Love, which I haven't seen and realistically probably won't. But apparently, so I think it was Heather that raised Heather that came on our pod for our year-end review. I think she asked, she said something along the lines of like they didn't say that they loved each other until the very last episode. And like I said, I haven't seen this drama, so I can't comment on it really that contextually. But I did say I would want to know, or I replied rather to say that I love you in Chinese is really quite a strong phrase that kind of isn't that commonly used, I don't think. So to me, I mean, this might not be the same for mainland Chinese people. I'm just speaking like for me as a Cantonese speaker, like if somebody said that to me, like I'd probably only hear it in dramas. Like it seems like super dramatic way of expressing your feelings to somebody. To me.
Wow, really?
So we would like, we would say that we like you, or we'd say that I really, really like you. And that would be like my topmost expression of somebody that I was like massively in love with. Like to say that I love them just feels like too much, it just really fills me with this kind of like, oh, that's like a bit overdone. So like I said, I haven't seen that C drama, but I said that maybe it wasn't said until the last episode was because it kind of had to get, it was such a big thing to say that you'd save it for the last, for the last episode. But anyway, how you actually say it is 我爱你. So I, 我 is I is to love, 你 is you. So 我爱你. But the more common phrase is the I like you, which is 我喜欢你. I 喜欢 is like you. 我喜欢你. or 我很喜欢你, which is I really like you. Yeah, so that's kind of probably for me like where my comfort level would be in terms of like someone expressing first. And I would never say, I've never once in my life said I love you using the I character, like the oi character, to my parents ever. And they would be like, what? They would be really a little bit freaked if I said it to them. And similarly, they've never said it to me either, right? So this is the level of like this character and how big a character it is. It'll be really interesting to hear what William thinks about it, like actually. So like in Taiwan, whether it's like more common to say what I mean than it is. Like I'm definitely coming from, I'm not going to speak for all Chinese people. It's just like my kind of Cantonese viewpoint of it. And yeah. And then there's another character which I find really fascinating, which I really love, which we don't have a direct translation of in English, which is a phrase called "wo tongue ai ni." So tongue, or tongue ni. So tongue, the Chinese radical. Actually, Jamal, let me just double check in case I'm like.
And remind me really quick, are you speaking Cantonese right now w with what
Oh, the
I need?
tongue. Well, I need
Or
Mandarin. Oh, yeah,
man, oh,
Mandarin.
that's
Yeah,
Mandarin.
yeah. Yeah. So, well, tongue. You can also say well, tongue ni. But that. So the tongue in that character is pain, is to ache, and to be sore, and we generally use it to symbolize a mother's love for their children, or a parent's love for their children, because that love is slightly painful and slightly sore. It's not actually 100% pure because it comes with a lot of sorrow, ache, pain, anxiety, worry. And I really love it because it isn't actually, it's a really symbolic and very like emotive way of explaining a love that a parent has for their child. Because it isn't this kind of like romance, beautiful light, you know, spring butterflies, love, pure love. It's painful. It comes with like it's a sore, like an ache. It's to be like, it is to be like to dote on somebody. Well, tongue ai ni means to like be really fond of them, to dote on them, to care about them, to really, really love them. But you don't generally use it for romantic love. So you wouldn't say well, tongue ai ni to somebody who is your to be boyfriend or your husband. It is a intergenerational familial love. So your grandma can tongue ai ni, or your mum can tongue ai ni, and you can tongue ai your grand. But generally, it's like the older generation, how they feel towards the younger generation, that kind of all-encompassing anxiety slash love that we feel for our little ones. Yeah. So I really love it.
Oh, that's great. I really like that too. And then in Cantonese, what would that character, that overdramatic love character,
Yeah,
sound
sadly, it would be ngo ngoi lei. So ngo is I, ngoi is love, lei is you, ngoi lei. And then we use a completely different word for like. So actually, we could say oh hei fun nei. I guess that's like more formal, but we also say oh zhong yi lei. I like you, or zhong yi is to like in Cantonese, the less formal way of saying you like something.
I think a Korean culture, it comes like in between the Chinese and the like Western, in terms of like whether you say I love you or I like you, because in a lot of these dramas, sometimes I like you is actually being translated in English to I love you because of the moment. Because the moment feels heavy. And so in English, we would expect I love you, but actually in Korean, they're saying I like you.
So
So that actually happens a lot.
So
So
what's the I
recently,
like you in Korean?
좋아해. 좋아해
좋아해.
is.
Yeah,
Is I
I've heard
like
that.
you, and 사랑해 is I love you. Like you could say I really like truly like you, like 정말 좋아해, 너무 좋아해, like I like you so much,
Yes.
like that. But I feel like Koreans do use like more than love.
Mm.
And sometimes, in order to kind of bridge that cultural gap,
Yeah.
I think that they translate lo like to love in English because of
Ah.
the mo that the feeling of the moment, you know, in the scene. Because I
Yeah.
think I've recently saw that in Dr. Slump, because I'm watching that right now, and I was like, oh, they translated that I like you to I love you instead. But yeah. I think I don't think it happens all the time, but just in certain moments where like an English speaking audience would expect the I love you, but a Korean character actually says I like you, I think they sometimes do
Yeah. Huh, okay, cool.
that. What do you think the hardest sounds in Cantonese or Mandarin are to pronounce for English speakers, like vowels or consonants that don't exist in English, like because we've talked about that kind of thing in Korean also, and we mentioned on the pod with William about how the X or the TS is like xia, wuxia, wuxia is not a consonant that exists in English, so it's tricky for like English speakers. Do you have a few examples of other ones like that?
I think the main three ones that are Romanized are the words that begin with an X, words that begin with a Z, words that begin with a Q, and then there are the difference between a CH and a ZH and an SH, which are quite difficult to differentiate, I think, for non-native, well, non-Chinese speakers. So starting with the X is like a sh sh sound. It's like right at the front of the throat, at the mouth. And so Xi Jinping, for example, who is the president of China, he, if you were to maybe not spell it with an X, would be more an SHE. So she, as in
She,
she went to the
she.
shop, she. So Xi Jinping.
She.
And because of the wuxia in the X and the I A ending turns it more into a sha, so an SHA
Xia.
sound rather than
Xia.
SHE. So those that's X. Then Z, so for example, Zhang Ziyi, who is the actress from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, she has two Zs in her name, and I remember people having a real problem, trouble with her surname. So her surname is actually Zhang, so it's
Zhang.
ZH ANG. So the Z and the H are said J, like more like a kind of like a J, yeah. So Zhang. And
Jiang.
then her second, her given name is Ziyi. So Zi is ZI. And that's Zi.
Zi.
Yeah,
Zi.
Ziyi. So
Ziyi.
those two, so Zs are difficult. And then the last one is the Q. So the Qs we've heard in the Qing dynasty. So it sounds a bit more like a CH. So Qing and then Quanqiu, like a the whole world, like. Quan, qiu. It's more like a CH sound. Yeah. So those are the kind of difficult ones, I think, because they are using consonants that we don't use that often for specific sounds. But I would say that with Chinese, it's a bit like German in that it's standardized. So once you've learnt your pinyin sounds, they don't change. It's not like English that just sticks like random words in that don't then make an appearance and are absolute bastards to spell. Like, you know, like when you've got young kids and they're like, how do you spell cough and why does it have a G? And you're just like, it just does. And I don't know why. Just gonna have to learn it. Like, that doesn't exist in Chinese. So, like, it basically is spelt the same way all the way through. No exceptions, no learning like different rules for different stuff. You don't have any of that stuff like you do in English. It is standardized. So once you've got past that, it's not that difficult. What probably is difficult though, and I think most people who've even dabbled with a little bit of Chinese would know, is that it's a tonal language. So sounds said in different tones have completely different meanings. So for English speakers, this can become like a hurdle when they're learning. I think because we teach English speakers with romanization. So the way I was taught when I was learning Mandarin. So the good thing is that Mandarin has only, say only four tones to learn. So you only have four tones to learn in Mandarin. Cantonese has either seven or nine, depending on which linguistic, rules you follow. But either way, a shed load more than Mandarin, and therefore a lot harder to learn than Mandarin. I think Cantonese is a super hard language to learn, like really hard to learn. Mandarin is a lot simpler in that way. So we are taught in Chinese when we first start learning it as English speakers, with the classic one you start with is the sound ma, MA, because it's quite easy to say for English. And we are taught that you can say Mandarin, so you can say the word ma in four tones, and they mean four different words. So you'd say ma, which is the first tone, it's like a high level tone. Yeah, ma.
Ma.
And ma means mum. So mama is like, mama is your mum, right? And then there's a rising second tone. So it's ma, where you start low and you go up. So ma.
Ma.
So ma, second tone, is hemp, randomly.
Hemp,
Hemp, yeah.
like the fiber.
Yes, yeah, like flax. Yeah, hemp, the
Okay,
fiber. Yeah, that's how we learned it.
hemp.
I don't know why.
Ma.
Ma. So that's the second. It's also the first character for sesame.
Oh, okay.
Or well, actually, the second word for sesame is zima. Ma. And then the third tone, it's like an upside down kind of hat. So it's kind of goes, starts up, goes down low, and goes back up. So it's ma.
Ma,
Ah, yeah, and that means a
ma.
horse. And then the last tone is a really short, sharp. You start high, you end low, but it's really quick. So ma,
Ma.
and that's to cuss or verbally abuse somebody. So this is the classic way you learn Chinese. You go, ah, oh, it's ma, 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 ma. And so for an English speaker, you think, oh, blinking heck, how am I ever gonna master this language, because these things sound exactly the same and they mean completely different things.
Right.
But actually, I think it's kind of the wrong way to teach English speakers, because you really need to look at it from a Chinese point of view. From a Chinese point of view, these are not the same words said in the different tones. They are
Right.
completely different words, because
Right.
for Chinese people, these are four separate characters and you just
Yeah.
pronounce them as those words. And those words just sound like ma, 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 ma. And so you're not learning, because obviously a Chinese speaker wouldn't visualize the letters MA in their head and then try to remember what tone to say them in. They would just know that a horse is a ma, and you would never call a horse ma, because that's just not the word for a horse. So it's kind of, I think we confuse our English learners of Chinese by teaching them this kind of romanized Chinese way. But then I don't necessarily have like a solution for how you would teach them otherwise. But it's just that often people get it in their head. They're like, oh, shoot, I have this word like shi, there's 200 characters. I'd have to learn shi, like all these different shis in lots of different tones. But actually, they're 200 different separate words. They just happen to have the same sound, if that makes sense.
Okay. Wait, so but
Yeah.
in opinion, are they spelled the same? Ma and
Yeah,
ma
they're all spelled the
and
same. Yeah.
ma.
Yeah.
They're all spelled, so I mean that I kind of get why English speakers are taught that way, because it's
Yes.
like if they're not learning actually how to read the Chinese characters, then
Yeah. I mean,
at the same time.
even if they are like the high barrier to learning Chinese characters is just so huge that you kind of have to bridge it with romanization. So it isn't, there isn't an easy solution, but at the same time it does create confusion quite easily. So in Chinese language textbooks, you will have the tones over the pinyin to help you pronounce the word, and then also in Chinese dictionaries. If you look them up, they will also have the tone, so you learn how to say the character. But if it's written out, like I don't know. I guess if they romanize, like if they romanize street signs in Chinese or something, they don't put tones in there.
I
You gotta
see.
go and work that out yourself. They will just spell it out like the romanization of it. Yeah, which is why you kind of like learning Chinese has to kind of go hand in hand with learning the Chinese characters. Otherwise, you're not gonna, after a while, those helpful tone marks will stop appearing in textbooks and things, and you're expected to learn those characters and therefore learn the tones of how to use them. But generally speaking, even though obviously, you don't know whether you're using the word hemp, horse, cuss or mum in a character, it might sound like shoot, like I could say something really offensive if I didn't use the right tone. Generally speaking, native Chinese speakers would be able to tell from the context of what you're saying, even if your tones are all completely mangled up, what you're trying to say. And those of us who speak dialect language will often mangle out it. So my Mandarin is often tonally wrong because I've like mangled it, or I've forgotten which one it is, and I've picked the wrong one, or I'm using a Cantonese one because that's kind of my accent. But Mandarin people will still, or Mandarin speakers rather, will still understand me generally through the context of what I'm saying. Or sometimes I have to kind of repeat things more clearly, and then they correct my tone. But they're kind of used to, like, Chinese people are often used to doing that because loads of their fellow countrymen will have different accents and say things in slightly different ways. So there's less kind of judgment of like, oh, you're not, you don't know you're Chinese. Although I think obviously that changes as well. Like, if you're living in the urban elite of Shanghai, then you probably are going to be judged for having a rural accent. But yeah, generally speaking, if you're learning Chinese and you're finding the tones kind of difficult, as a learner, I think you're given a lot of like buy because Chinese people understand that it's really difficult. Like tones are hard to master.
Cool. All right, so back to dramas real quick. How do you feel about the quality of English language subs on the Chinese dramas you've watched recently? Are there like turns of phrase or idioms that you don't feel like they get quite right in terms of like kind of the feel of the language, or do they do a pretty good job?
I think generally they do a pretty good job. Yeah. I think I said this before in a podcast with Liliana, actually on Tea and Soju Pod, that for example, on Love Between Fairy and Devil, because it's a historical, I personally, as an English speaker, want to see slightly more formal English because it's a historical drama. So, in the same way that we wouldn't translate Mr. Darcy saying, hey, stop what you're doing because it just sounds wrong to us. I would similarly wish that they had translated certain things that the characters said to each other, but especially Dongfang Qingchang, to be less colloquial and less slangy, because he is the demon lord from a historical time. She is, and then obviously she herself is an immortal goddess as well, so she also shouldn't be using such slangy language. But that for me is more of a like a taste thing, I guess, rather than they're not translating it correctly. And then I think the other thing I remember posting about this on Instagram is that Chinese is a really, really succinct language because of its characters. You can say very deep, layered things with just four characters, for example. So the epitome of Chinese language fluency is to put a lot of what we call cheng yu, which are idiomatic phrases, into our Chinese. It shows that we have an in-depth knowledge of our culture, of all of the I Ching and the classics and the Confucian analects and all of that stuff that William spoke about. We are the product of huge, like, centuries of like learned writing, and therefore those of us who use a lot of these idioms in our language are, seen as using the best Chinese, the most poetic and like, yeah, good quality Chinese language. But a lot of these four letter idioms are quite difficult to translate into English because they often come with, commonly known or understood myths or folklore or each in classic, terms or confusing
Right.
concepts that are impossible to translate into an English sub anywhere, even if you had pages to do it, let alone like a screen where it's just going to quickly, like rapidly go. So I actually think translators do an amazing job of kind of getting the meaning across and not having the bandwidth to use lots of Chinese, lots of English characters. And then I think the other thing was, like, I translated this. There's a very, for me, like, highly emotional scene on a bridge. I don't know if you remember it, in Love Between Fairy and Devil, between Dongfang Qingchang and Orchid. So Dongfang Qingchang and Xiaolanghua, who's Orchid, are having a conversation. Actually, she's not Xiaolanghua at that point, but I'm not going to talk about this because it's spoilery. Anyway,
Oh,
this
yeah.
scene on the bridge is amazing, and Dongfang Qingchang gives this really emotive speech, and the translators did a great job of it. But because of the brevity of Chinese language, like what he said, you can say a lot with just 20 characters in Chinese, and you can get a lot of depth of meaning in just 20 characters. But obviously, 20 characters spoken out loud in Chinese would only take like a few seconds at the most. But to translate that properly into English would require many, many, many English words, because English is not as brief or succinct or concise as Chinese is. So they could never fully translate what he said in Chinese into English, because it wouldn't fit into the screen quickly enough for you to move, like for viewers to read the subtitles. So I always feel for Chinese language translators, because they can never fully get the meaning of everything that a character is saying into English because of the brevity of Chinese language. And that particular scene, like, I just love the way he expressed himself. He was so poetic, and it was really like expressed so much of the hurt that he had felt. But the English kind of, it gave you the meaning, so you didn't lose any of the meaning, but you lost a lot of the poetry, a lot of the depth, a lot of the layering of that dialogue. And so for me, that's like the shame of, that's the kind of stuff that you lose in translation. But it absolutely isn't a subtitler's fault. It is just obviously the format of basically the difference between the languages, and also the demands that you have to fit, only so many words so that people can keep up, with the scene.
Like I feel like the Viki subbers for K dramas, they put a lot of stuff in parentheses and you really do have to pause it because there's so much
So
on the
much.
screen
Yeah,
and it
I
goes too fast.
agree.
Yeah, but so if that's like a constant struggle for the Chinese language subbers, that's like that sounds so challenging.
Really challenging. And then also, I think similar to K drama, Chinese dramas or Chinese language in general, they really love wordplay and they really love puns. And so the translators often, I think, struggle to fully express. And it's usually humor as well, right? They're using it as a pun for something funny, and it's quite difficult to translate. So, but I think that's just a common struggle, for drama. But I know that I could see that when I'm watching like a Vicky drama, they often try to explain the pun in these parentheses, and even when they've explained it, I'm like, I still don't really get it. But thank you for trying to explain. So some of you may have noticed before in the podcast that Grace and I have consistently noted that Cantonese seems to sound a lot more similar to Korean than Mandarin. And so we looked into this, and the reasons for this seem pretty complicated. But a major one seems to be that Cantonese sounds the most similar of all the modern Chinese languages to Middle Chinese, which is the historical variety of Chinese in use from the 4th to the 12th century CE. And apparently, it was during the early Middle Chinese period that large amounts of Chinese vocabulary were systematically borrowed by Vietnamese, Korean, and Japanese. So much so that modern scholars often reference these languages when they are reconstructing the sounds of Middle Chinese.
That makes a lot of sense, and I think that's really cool, like that it's like kind of a snapshot in time. But yeah, so this is a nice seg into our last section. Sarah and I are going to compare a number of Cantonese words with their counterparts in Korean to see how much they match up.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about doing this kind of segment since like the Korean language pod, actually. So this doesn't work with, for all Korean words, obviously, because there's, a large number of Korean words that are native Korean or that are loaner words from other languages like English. But especially for older words and concepts, many have associated hanja or Chinese characters. So actually, to start, I'm wondering how you say Cantonese in Cantonese. And how you say it in Mandarin, because I looked up how you say it in Korean, and it's Gwangdongo. Gwangdongo, or the language of Gwangdong. But I wonder if that's also a time capsule thing where like they decided like, this is what this area is called at this period of time, and that's what the language is going to be called. Yeah, because that's what happened with the word Cantonese, which is the English name for the city of Gwangju,
Which is
from
Canton,
like a different time period, like a few hundred years ago.
So Cantonese is Guangdonghua. So it does sound quite similar.
Oh, yeah, it does sound pretty similar. And does it mean the language of
Of
Kwang?
Canton, yeah. So listen, I've got this set of words that I've been noting in my K-drama watching because I'm a bit of a sad nerd, that sounds similar to me in Cantonese. So I was going to say like a few, which I'll try and put some context around them because obviously, alone without context would be a bit weird.
Am
But
I going to guess what the
and you're going to
Korean
try
word
and
is if
guess,
you say it in... Oh, okay,
but I'm going to say in
cool.
Cantonese and see if you could remember. So this one would come up in school, and exams, but it's hapgat.
Oh, the word is shoot. I can't think of the word off the top of my head, but it doesn't mean that you've passed.
Yes, it does. And that means exactly the same in Cantonese. Hap gap.
Cool. Or like been
Yes.
accepted.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. You've been
Cool,
accepted. And then another one is when somebody is talking about how they feel, and they would say, "Oh, ho, gam dong, gam dong."
Gamdong is I feel moved.
Cool. And then another thing would be like, say again, like your mum was talking to you about your tests, and she said you had to junbei,
Oh,
junbei.
Chunbi. Chunbi. Chunbi, get ready.
Get
Get
ready,
ready.
prepare. That's cool. Well, I'll do one last one. And then another one is, if you were explaining how much of something, and I said tune bowl. Tune bowl. Like, how much of the cake do you want to have? And I said tune bowl.
Well, that one is tricky.
I think it's something like chumbuda or something like that.
Oh, okay. I was trying to think of words for part of it. Chumbu is the whole
The
thing.
whole thing. The whole thing. Tune bowl. Like, the whole thing. Anyway, so that was my mini. I had a few more actually. Like, it's my nerdy thing to do. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I wonder if that character's the same.
I saw one that what is police in Cantonese? 'Cause I think in Korean it's gyeongchal.
In it's gingtat in Cantonese.
Okay.
Actually, student is very similar. So in Cantonese, hoksang.
Oh yeah,
Hoksang.
hakseng. Hakseng. Cool. Yeah, so the one I was curious about, because these are definitely words that have hanja associated. Gong Yu. You know the actor that a lot of people say Gong Yu, but it's Gong Yu. So the reason that like this is fascinating to me is because it shows how a lot of Korean words have roots in Chinese characters and how they get like put together. So like Gong Yu, like the actor Gong Yu, there's a word Gong Yu that means to share.
We have to have it all together.
And the reason this word sticks in my mind, not just because of Kong Yu, well, j because of Kong Yu, actually, because in Yumi cells, there's a scene with the kind of the naughty cell. Did you
Ah,
see
okay.
Yumi cells?
I haven't seen. No, I'm a bit of a
Oh, okay.
completist, so I was like, I'm waiting for Yumi Cells 3.
I don't know if they're gonna ever
I
make
know
it,
that's
though.
exactly what Gavin said. Gavin's like, they might not ever make it. Just watch it. And I'm just like, I don't like things that aren't finished. I'm bad like
Oh,
that.
but there is a scene in Yumi cell, and one of her cells is the naughty cell. He's kind of like, got dirty thoughts and things like that. And there's a part where naughty cell is holding like a picket, like a sign that says, "I want to do Gong Yu," in Korean. It says "Gong Yu 하고 싶어." In English, they translated it, "I want to do Gong Yu." And I was like, "What?" Like, I didn't think that doing someone was like an expression in Korean, and it actually isn't. So that particular joke was for people who understand enough English to know that that's a naughty thing to say. And to associate it with that actor, because if you just read it in Korean, it just means I want to share it together.
It doesn't say I want to do Gong Yu.
It doesn't say that at all. But if you know both English and Korean, you can read it that way. And so I thought that was like a particularly clever joke because it was like you. I mean, for me, because
It's like a
I had to know both Korean and English.
a
So
bilingual
anyway,
K-drama joke.
yeah, exactly. And then I started noticing the like Kong in other words, like so you mentioned Kamdong before, which is to be moved, and Kamjong is a similar word, and it just is talking about emotions or feelings. And then I learned recently Gonggam. Gonggam is like, so it's like to share the feeling, so it's to feel empathy or sympathy. And so like you can see like that, because I've pasted the Chinese characters in the Korean, like how they actually kind of work the same way. They
They
like
have the same
they
meaning.
yeah they have the same meaning. And so it's pretty direct, and I thought that was interesting.
That's cool. And then I think the final thing I wanted to say about Chinese language was that despite the tones and the Chinese language being itself a very high barrier to learning Chinese, grammatically speaking, Chinese is super simple. Like super, super simple, especially for someone who has learned, like me, who's learned like Romanic languages, and German languages, you know, and we have things in feminine and masculine, or in German we have Neuter as well, like neutral, and you have to learn all the different verb endings, and you have to conjugate verbs and all the rest of it. We don't have any of that in Chinese. We do not conjugate verbs in Chinese. I think you guys do, right? In Korean, like you conjugate verbs in Chinese, in Korean, sorry.
We change up
You have to
verbs
change the
based
verb
on
based on whether
to fit the
what you're talking about,
situation.
and and
The past tense,
past tense, or like if you're future,
future.
So in Chinese, and you have to learn them all, right? So if you have a verb, like the infinitive of the verb, you would have to learn all the different ways to say it, past tense, future tense, like
In
and in
different
other languages, in
situations.
different situations, whether there's plural of you or only one of you, and you know, blah blah blah. Like in Chinese, there is no verb conjugation. So you learn the infinitive and that's it. And then you learn the words like yesterday I did verb, like the infinitive. And you just have to learn yesterday I did, and then you just learn the verb and you already know it. So you don't need to say yesterday I went swimming. You just say yesterday swimming. Tomorrow swimming, or swim actually technically, right? The infinitive of swimming is swim, to swim. So you just learn like Grace is going to swim tomorrow. Grace already swim yesterday. Grace is you know, in the process of swimming or just swim. This is why when Chinese people speak English, a quick and easy way to do the accent, so to speak, is to not conjugate verbs. And to only ever use the infinitive of the verb because they don't conjugate. We don't conjugate in Chinese. So, verb conjugation is really painful for Chinese language learners of English,
Yeah.
because it's just so complicated and there are so many different tenses and things. Whereas Chinese keeps it super simple.
Yeah.
It's all contextual. So, you know, if you're talking about yesterday, if you're talking about somebody else, if you're talking about a group, then the verb just sorts itself out. Like you don't need to learn whole new ones. And just
Yeah.
generally, the grammatical rules are so much more simpler. Like there aren't loads and loads of exceptions. Like I was reading, this is like slightly tangential, massively tangential actually. But like English has this like unspoken set of ways, the order of things that you put things in when you're talking about an adjective.
Oh,
So, for
yeah.
example, have you seen this? Like this, I can't find it anymore, but this is really fun sentence where they're talking about something, and they're talking about its size, and they're talking about its color, and they're talking about its height, and it's like of what time it is, and you have to put them in a different order, a specific order, because if you put it in a different order, you don't sound like a native speaker. But it's quite complicated, like to remember. And obviously, native English speakers just do it naturally. Like they'll say,
Right.
so my example of this is the English translation for goblin. So, guardian, the great and lonely god, right? We wouldn't actually say the great and lonely god. We would say a lonely great god, right? The lonely has to come before the great if you're a native English speaker, because it sounds weird to put great before lo lonely, right? Because he's lonely first, and then I mean, I don't know what the rules are. I just know that it doesn't sound right if you say great lonely god. You have to
Except
say
now that it
lonely
now
great god.
I except now I know it's the great and lonely God, so I'm like, does it not sound
Because he's not like a great lonely, like he's not greatly lonely, do you know what I mean? He's both great and lonely. But the great has to go like last, because he's first has to be lonely. If he was green, for example, so he'd be the lonely green god. You couldn't then say a great green lonely god, because it just sounds wrong. Do you know what I mean? So like I was talking to a Chinese learner and she was just like, this drives me insane. And I'm like, yes, I completely see why it would drive you insane. Because there's like so, and you
Totally.
can add all sorts of adjectives to this thing, and you would know, you know, like if he was a speedy, lonely, great god, then, you know, you couldn't just randomly say great, lonely, green, speedy god, because you'd be like, what are you saying? Like, it doesn't make sense. You know, you have to put it in the right order, and just learning what that right order, so to speak, it's really complicated. I mean, not that you'd stick
It
that
is.
many adjectives together anyway, like to produce this sentence, it'd be
Right.
a bit farcical. But, you know, you would still have to go through this exercise if you were stringing together three adjectives for something.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's true. That's
I just find
true.
it funny. I always think of that when I see the great and lonely god. Although
I never
everyone
think of
calls it
that
goblin.
because I just learned that that was what it was called and it became normal. So I'm like, now I can't even I can't even see the problem with it. Yeah. But what you were saying earlier about how the shortcut to doing a Chinese accent is to not conjugate verbs really reminded me of like a bit in a Trevor Noah stand-up special
Yeah.
where he says, you know, like we feel all kinds of ways about accents. With some accents we think, oh, that's fancy, and some accents we think, oh, that sounds uneducated, but really
Yes.
all that accents are is one person speaking your language with the rules of their language. And I was
Exactly.
like, oh my goodness, that is exactly right.
That's so
That's
true.
exactly,
Yeah, and that reminds me, and I think we shared it, didn't we, on our Instagram. There is a really funny video. So if we do another Korean language pod, we should come and probably play the audio. But they basically read out English as if they were speaking Korean. So the word order for Korean to an English speaker is just so screwed up. And so it's really funny listening to them speak English, but with a Korean language order. And it Yeah, and it does help you understand like when Koreans who don't speak very good English speak, like why they kind of do the order that they do, because obviously they're doing it as they would do in Korean.
Right. And it helps you understand why, like, if you're learning Korean, it's so hard. Like, that doesn't make, like, how is that logical? You know? And then a lot of people say, oh, this kind of sounds like Yoda.
It does. It does sound
Yeah.
like Yoda. That
Yeah.
is, it's because I guess what is it makes it sound like Yoda? I think all the verbs are all the verbs at the end. Is that why?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your Chinese language knowledge and all of these bits of information with us. Like it really like answered a lot of questions that I just had like hanging out in my head. And if, you know, listeners out there are thinking of other questions about Chinese that have popped up as you've been listening to us, feel free or we welcome you to message us on Instagram at Afternoon Asks or email us at afternoonasks.gmail.com.
Yes, and we actually did have some questions on the Patreon, but they were more kind of Chinese drama cultural questions. So we will
Ah,
have
okay.
a future pod. I might come and get a guest on to answer some of those questions. So again, if you are also into your C dramas at the moment and have various different questions about C dramas, do email them in and we will do a future C drama kind of question pod.
Sounds great.
Okay, so let's learn, Grace, how to say goodbye in Chinese,
Okay.
which I say in our outro anyway. Although I always wonder whether I'm saying the right, 'cause so the word to say goodbye in Chinese is zai jian. So
Zai jian.
yeah, zai is to again, is
Zai.
the word again, and jian is to see you. So it's basically see you
Zai
again. So zai
jian.
jian. But I don't want to get too existential like the way we did before, but technically, because we're not seeing our listeners, I don't even know whether or not I should be saying zai jian. But I don't think there's like a podcast listening, equivalent in Chinese. Because I was also thinking, like, when you have a telephone call, because I also love this, right? In Korean, how do you finish a telephone call in Korean? But we were talking about.
So here's the thing. You either go, and then you just hang up,
Right.
or you go, oh, 그래, 끊어, which means, okay, all right, hang up.
Hang up. I love that. I love the like the just the straightforward brevity of it. Whereas in Cantonese, like for me, if I'm putting down the phone in Chinese, we don't really have a way of saying it. So we've actually in Cantonese, and obviously we were colonized by the British for 100 years, so we've kind of adopted bye as a way of
Ah,
saying goodbye. So it's bye bye. So it's a Cantonese like
bye
accented way of saying bye bye. But that's
bye.
actually how we say it. So if I'm putting the phone down to my mum, I'm usually saying ho 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 ho. Like how means good, 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 good. So I'm like good, 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 good. Like, 'cause my mum's usually got like about 10 million instructions of things that I do or shouldn't be doing. So I'm like, ha ha ha, like, okay, yeah, got it, got it, got it. Bye. And then I put the phone down. So we don't actually have a way of like a formal, well, a Chinese language way of, I mean, this is obviously in Cantonese, which is like a very informal language, as I've said. So I should really investigate how you might formally say goodbye
Yeah.
on the phone if you're not actually seeing someone.
Actually, in Korean, it's not even hang up. It's like end it.
End it. Enough.
it's like, gonna means like to cut off.
All right.
So let's cut off this call.
To me, it's also because I learned a bit of German. It's like to me, it sounds like "genau" in German, which means enough. So when I hear it, I'm always like, I always imagine like the Korean person just going like, "I'm done, done with this conversation. Enough."
Okay, so what are we learning? Are we saying
We're gonna learn goodbye because this is useful anyway. So should you ever like meet a Chinese person or go to China, you can say when you say goodbye, "再见."
再见.
Yeah, and the two fourth tones. So it's like two sharp. Go from the
Okay.
top to the bottom. Zai jian.
再见.
Yes.
再见.
So, zai jian, everybody. Bye
再见,
bye.
everybody. Bye.
감사합니다. Thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed our pod. Follow us on our Instagram at Afternoon Asks or our website, www.afternoonasks.com.
Our network, Studio Afterglow, brings you more podcasts for your enjoyment. To get more K-drama content from a writer's lens and listen to your K-romance guides, check out Afternoon of Delight. For any BTS fans out there, Afternoon of Army is here for thinky, thirsty, and over 30 takes on army life. Or check out It's Bananas, the podcast where we build an appetite for juicy living with your host, Becky Onesta. She explores how tasting new and diverse fruits can lead to self-discovery, joy, and connection. If you want to hang with us and other K-drama fans, do consider joining us on Afternoon at Delight Patreon. There are different levels for you to access, and it's a lot of fun. Go to www.afternoonadelightpodcast.com to sign up. Finally, if you have any questions for us, please feel free to contact us via socials or our email, afternoonaasks@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, 다음에 또 만나요.